This is All Things Considered on North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Time again to begin your weekend with a discussion about politics in the Old North State. Becky Gray with the conservative John Locke Foundation is here, along with Rob Schofield from the progressive NC Policy Watch. Greetings.
Greetings. Happy to be here.
On Wednesday, we saw the first significant test of kind of sort of divided government when Republicans failed to override the Democratic governor's veto of the Born Alive Act. Refresher. Under the bill, doctors would have faced felony charges for not caring for a child delivered alive following a late-term abortion. Facts and data were hard to come by on this issue during debate the last couple of months. Certainly a very personal topic. This was something of a wedge issue. You can think House Bill 2. Policy-wise, would have had a relatively limited impact. However, its political repercussions could extend into 2020. Rob, how significant is it that Democrats were able to hold strong, from their perspective, strong enough to sustain the veto?
Very important. It's a first in a long time, and it shows that they are willing to stand by the governor, to back his vetoes of legislation. One hopes that it will carry over to other legislation, because what this ought ultimately to lead to, and what we ought to have right now in North Carolina, is some sort of a middle ground government, a negotiation over key public policy between the governor and the General Assembly. That's what I think the people clearly voted for when they elected a Democratic governor, when they voted to do away with the Republican supermajorities. They were, in effect, casting a vote for negotiations over all kinds of issues. And this was an issue, clearly, there hadn't been any negotiations on, probably weren't possible to have negotiations on. I think it's the most important message here is what it means for other issues. The Democrats have sort of proved to themselves they can do this, and hopefully it will have an impact on the budget and some other more substantive policy issues.
Well, Jeff, I agree with your assessment. In reality, had the bill passed, had the veto been overridden, this is one of those, it would have been hard to administer, some other things. But the message there, I think, was really clear in that should babies who are born alive in an abortion process, should they be allowed to be murdered as soon as they're born? That was the question. That was the debate. That was, what these lawmakers came down on one side or the other of it. I think it's a shame that the political lining up was what really drove this issue. I think what we're missing, Rob mentioned middle of the road negotiations and policies. I think what we're missing too is legislators being able to vote what really their conscience is, rather than being pulled towards lining up behind a political party.
Rob wants to respond, but let me ask you a question first. Mm-hmm. If this is really about intellectual honesty, then why didn't Republicans frame this as this doesn't happen, there's no data to support this happens, but we want to make sure that if it ever happens that there's an additional layer of punishment on the table? They didn't frame it that way. They framed it as Democrats don't care about children being born.
Well, the reality of it is we don't know whether this happens in North Carolina because there are no records kept of this. For obvious reasons, this is not one of those issues where people are going to stand up and say, oh, yes, as a physician, I murder babies when they're born alive after an abortion. They aren't going to do that. Anecdotally, from physicians and nurses across the state, we know that this does happen. And that, we do. And
recently?
Today? I don't know.
There is no evidence of that, Becky. That's just not
Representative
true.
And physician Greg Murphy
Greg Murphy's wrong.
With you.
I disagree with Representative Murphy.
You can disagree with him, but I don't know that you can categorically say he's wrong. He's a physician. He has worked
has
in the hospital
performed an
for
abortion?
Years. He has seen this happen. Has he murdered
Did
a baby
he report
as a
it?
Result?
Then he should have reported that as a murder. That's the thing that was most outrageous about this. We had Representative Larry Pittman on the floor of the House accusing Democratic lawmakers of committing murder. He said they were the equivalent of murderers for opposing this legislation. And that's just outrageous, obviously.
That's
no
his
one
opinion.
Would. And it's outrageous.
And he's
it's
entitled
an outrageous.
To
but
it.
It's an outrageous.
Well, it may
opinion.
Be. But, Rob, lawmakers and everybody else are entitled. You're entitled to your opinion.
Absolutely.
Dr. Murphy is entitled to
he's
his
entitled
and to be able to report
wrong,
what he has observed.
Let's roll it back
wrong.
From opinion for a moment, though, because I was in the House chamber yesterday and Greg Murphy, who is a urologic surgeon
right.
from Pitt County, is the only doctor in the House. At no point did he offer any sort of concrete anecdote about this happening in North Carolina. He talked yesterday on the floor about delivering babies, and he made several references to Kenya. So again, just to hammer it home for a second, are there any, you said anecdote, my wife's a PA, I know a number of doctors. I've never heard any medical professional say, oh, this happened and I was around for it, or I heard about it, or I saw it. I've never heard that anecdotally, but you have.
Yes, so in these discussions, in committee discussions, in discussions with lawmakers. Representative Pat McElrath is one who talked about it, talked about nurses who had seen this.
40 years ago was her example, Becky.
Well,
her example was 40 years ago. My question
is, so this has been happening for 40 years?
But hang on. Let's bring a little intellectual honesty back to the table here, because the three of us have done that for a long time. Can you offer any specific anecdote or any specific example that this has happened anywhere recently in North Carolina?
Do I have that evidence? Or do I have personal knowledge of that?
Or has somebody told you about a specific example?
Yes. I mean, Dr. Murphy, Pat McElrath.
Hang on a second. Murphy and McElrath, neither of them offered a recent example. So let's not pivot back to them. Neither of them talked about this happening recently.
Okay, well, in private conversations,
Yes. So private conversations. Have told you that in private, this has happened recently.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, those lawmakers, if they are aware of that and didn't report it as a murder, which is what it would be and what our laws clearly say already, then they are guilty in that case. That's an outrageous assertion on their part.
This bill and this law would have explicitly said when a baby is born.
I don't want to rehash the bill because we've done this multiple times. I actually want you to respond to what Rob just said. If Murphy and McElrath have recent
knowledge.
Examples of this, and they have not gone to the state police, to local authorities, I mean, that's some level of obstruction of justice, is it not?
Yes, and they probably should have. But what we're talking about was this kind of law necessary? The Republicans felt like it was, and Democrats voted for this as well. They voted for the bill, and they voted against to override the veto. So, you know, this is a small number of Democrats. Yes. But, you know, this was a passionate issue. It is still a passionate issue. It's done now. And everybody is on record. Everybody in the General Assembly who voted is on record. And they will have to stand by their vote, no matter which way that goes.
That's for sure. And the people who are for this bill, obviously, are people who are against abortion, period. This is part of a national campaign to do away with abortion rights in our state, in our country.
That's not what this bill does.
That is absolutely what
this is not about.
This
is to protect babies.
I disagree. I'm right. Remember, I'm entitled to my opinion. I believe that the sponsors of this bill would be voting tomorrow if they could to outlaw all abortions in our state. And that's what we're seeing in other states around the country. And this is the same folks that are driving that in those other states. And that's what this bill is really about.
No, it's not.
But to push back a little bit on you, Rob, how would this bill, and we're going back to a bill that, again, for listeners, is not going to become law. How does this bill, would this bill have restricted access? This bill was not an abortion
bill. This bill is about building a propaganda campaign. It's about changing hearts and minds. The reality is that the overwhelming majority of Americans and North Carolinians believe that a woman should have reproductive freedom and that ultimately the decision about whether to terminate a pregnancy prior to viability should be between a woman and her doctor. The folks behind this legislation disagree. They think that abortion should be illegal in our state. They've been pushing this in other states. If you can convince people that doctors are murdering babies in rooms in hospitals in North Carolina, it's a much easier step to take when you propose your legislation to restrict abortion further. And there's no doubt that that's what's the ultimate agenda.
But that's not what this bill does.
We will leave it there. And we might leave it there forever because this bill is not moving forward. Let's chat about Tom Hoffler. He's the GOP strategist who helped to draw political maps in North Carolina, among other places. I believe the New York Times called him the Michelangelo of political cartography. He died last summer, and his estranged daughter turned over troves of documents to Common Cause, a good government organization. Common Cause has sued the North Carolina General Assembly previously due to unconstitutional or perceived unconstitutional gerrymanders. In court filings this week, the left-leaning organization Common Cause says that according to Hoffler's files, state lawmakers, and they were defendants in one of these gerrymandering challenges, lied to a federal court, and by doing so, were able to avoid having a special legislative election in 2017. Becky, how significant is this revelation?
Well, you know, we'll see. I mean, this is these documents and hard drives and other computer stuff and all associated with this, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of documents. And so to go through those and put all these pieces together, you know, how much of this was Tom Hoffler's opinion? How much of it was fact? How much is documented? You know, we've got a long way to go with this, I think, with an investigation. But, you know, surely it's something to look at. I think we should pay attention to it. You know, Tom Hoffler is a Republican map drawer. There are Democrat map drawers as well. The gerrymandering and how these things are structured and how they're done is the subject of numerous court cases, two of which are sitting at the United States Supreme Court. So how all of this fits together in this whole big picture, and then what direction we take from there is, you know, I think we're a long way from really anything concrete being, assumptions being made or conclusions being made, but this will be, I think we need to continue to look at these gerrymandering, how the maps are drawn by Republicans and Democrats. You know, there's one case before the U.S. Supreme Court has to do with Republican gerrymandering. Another has to do with the same thing from Democrats. So this is a bipartisan problem, and I think we need to continue to look at it.
Well, I agree with a lot of what Becky said, actually, there. I think the problem for the legislative defendants in this case, and the thing that's so especially damning in the most recent revelations, is that the legislative defendants, that is the Republicans who run the General Assembly, told the court that we don't know what we're going to do. We're going to hold public hearings, and then we're going to draw these maps. And what we now know is that Hoffler had already drawn the maps, that he had race-based data that they said they didn't have access to, that basically the deal was done before we went through this sham process of having hearings and supposedly drawing the maps afterwards. And so I think it's a very it's a damning development. It's going to be a big problem for the legislative defendants, and I think it's going to, in the end, lead more likely to a solution in which we actually get some fair maps in the state and we get a court ruling striking down the legislative districts in North Carolina.
And somebody asked me yesterday what I thought the likelihood of a redistricting bill, some sort of changes to the way that we draw the maps would happen. And I think that we're going to see that this session. I mean, kind of stretch there. There have been numerous bills that have been filed. I think one thing that we really need to look at are the rules around redistricting so that some of these things that have been occurring that we're seeing in these Hoffler documents and others, if we have really strict rules with the redistricting, there's a lot less wiggle room for gerrymandering, doing things like that. I think we need to take a really strong look at that. I'd like to see a constitutional amendment so that people across the state can decide, okay, how are we going to do this? Not just who's going to do it, but how we're going to do it.
The one thing we do have a rule now is that you can't lie to courts in your court
pleadings.
Well,
that's called perjury.
And that's what it appears
may,
that
there maybe what happened here. Maybe.
We don't know yet. Right.
Web only follow up. And it ain't going to happen, but I'm asking for funsies anyway. Our governor was the last in the country to get the veto. Our governor does not have a veto when it comes to redistricting issues, with the exception, I believe, of judicial redistricting. Should the governor, would you like to see the governor have a veto on redistricting in our state?
I will say no. And I say that no matter who the governor is. I think that our Constitution...
Right, I
no, you're right, the governor... Yeah,
and
that's what I'm addressing. My answer to that would be no. I think we've got enough politics involved in this. We certainly don't need another step in that. Under our Constitution, our legislature is authorized and instructed to draw the maps. They are the representative group of, you know, 170 members who come from all across the state, all kinds of different demographics. I think they are the ones that are best equipped. And I say that no matter who's in charge or what the political party is. I think that they are the best ones to make that decision with, again, guardrails of really strictly construed rules to be in place as to how they can do it.
I think it's essentially impossible for politicians to draw fair maps. I think the legislature is not the body that should be drawing the maps. It should be a nonpartisan redistricting commission of independent individuals who have very strict rules but who are not subject to running for office. I think that that would be a better solution. It's worked better in other states. I fear very much that we will ultimately, we might pass some sort of redistricting reform here in North Carolina that will still be susceptible to being manipulated. There have been proposals for giving this map drawing authority to legislative staff, which I think is a terrible idea. This ought to be the repository of a truly independent body.
Of course, the problem with that is, you know, how do you find a truly independent redistricting commission, a group of people that have enough knowledge to do it that would be truly independent. That's really the challenge that we've been, of how to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, and
some states have worked better than others. There are a number of states that have moved independent.
Former judges,
ways to do it. Which actually is to our benefit, I think, too, is that, you know, we can look to other states and look for best practices and what's worked and what hasn't, and perhaps craft one that could be a model for the rest of the country.
Thursday marked the 75th anniversary of D-Day, when Allied forces stormed the beaches of Normandy and began a battle that ultimately took back Western Europe and changed the course of world history. Operation Overlord also led to tens of thousands of casualties, thousands of deaths, and 2,501 Americans who made the ultimate sacrifice. Lawmakers gathered at the old Capitol to honor the occasion. From each of you, if you've got one, a reflection, whether it's personal and familial, perhaps, or something about this week's ceremonies.
The thing I'm struck by when I think about D-Day is that, and I wrote a column about this last year, actually, is that the thing that was so striking about it, if you're a military historian, if you studied, if you watched all the movies, if you love Saving Private Ryan like so many people do, and read Cohen's books and things, is that Americans were in an impossible situation, a lot of them. A lot of their commanders had been immediately killed as soon as they hit the beach. And yet, because they had such individual ingenuity, they worked and figured things out on their own, which is a thing that Americans are distinctly proud of, the fact that we can respond to crises that just line soldiers figured out what to do. They didn't wait around to be told what to do. That being said, there is absolutely no way that D-Day would have succeeded had not millions of people bought war bonds, had not the government invested in those people, in that infrastructure, in the military, in all that went into that, in Eisenhower's troops and his command structure. They wouldn't have had any chance of succeeding on D-Day had we not done that. And it points to me the need for us to think about solving the problems that confront us now, whether it's climate change, whether it's all these existential problems we change, that we're going to have to invest the resources if we really want to get the kind of results that, or allow the people on the front lines to produce the kind of results that the people produced on D-Day.
Well, you know, Rob mentioned lots of different people and Americans coming together to make this successful, and of course the allies across the world. And you know, it really is about the American spirit is what we see. And as we celebrate the 75th anniversary, you know, I was struck by something else, is kind of reviewing the history, as how close it was. I mean, you know, kind of everything came together. Not everything was optimal, the weather and everything else, but how very close it was, that, you know, this wasn't a given and it wasn't a runaway. And of course, you know, the loss of lives and the sacrifice was huge. You know, just reminded constantly how fragile freedom is and how close we are at many, many turns and in many things out of our control, but just how very fragile it is, but how often the American spirit is what prevails. And then just finally, the celebration this week here in Raleigh at the old, you know, the very historical, traditional ceremonial session that they hold in the old chamber. After this week, too, you know, we spoke on the earlier part of this podcast about the very controversial Born Alive vote and other things that have been, the redistricting, other things that have been so controversial and pit lawmakers against each other. It becomes tiresome and hard to get through often. But the celebration of D-Day with all of the members coming together, the music that was provided, all the reverence for who we are, the American spirit, and also we as North Carolinians. So I think it was a nice way to end this week and maybe a reminder to our lawmakers that we are all in this together.
And just one other thing, we'd be remiss if we also didn't mention that it wasn't just Americans who landed on Omaha and Sword and Normandy that day. There were British soldiers. There were soldiers from a lot of allied countries. It wasn't just exclusively an American operation.
Rob Schofield is director of NC Policy Watch. Becky Gray is senior vice president at the John Locke Foundation. Enjoy your weekend.
Okay.
Thank you so
Thanks.
Much.